You may remember some time ago, I preached a message titled The Medes Under the Wall. And the idea of that message, we looked at how the city was so well protected and guarded that the people weren't even concerned about being overthrown or attacked, or, you know, they didn't have anything to worry about. And this morning, maybe it'll be a little different sermon. But I'd like to look at an avenue of where I feel like we could be. I think we are. We are under attack. And I have a fair amount of questions in this message. Some of these thoughts may have stemmed from the study we're doing, the ministry is having with the upper graders. We're studying a book on Anabaptist history called Cup and Cross. And as we know, the early Anabaptists, especially there in the 1500s and 1600s, went through some very, very hard times. And I had to think, sitting here this morning, you know, I wonder how often they even had a plural ministry team that they worked with. Because so often, many leaders were persecuted and put to death or exiled. And yeah, church life would have definitely been a lot different. In fact, they didn't even go to church. They met in people's houses over there in Switzerland, at least, the one area. They didn't even have churches. The date slips me. I think it was until 1847 until that group started having church in a designated church building. So the first question I'd like to ask is normal a good thing? And maybe it's like fear. Maybe there's some good things about normal, and maybe there's some bad things. This morning, you got some bulletins that weren't normal, and I didn't even know it because I printed them, and I saw they were printing okay, and I didn't look at them until my son got one, and he said, "Dad, it's upside down from the inside to the out." Okay. Yeah. Normal, a lot of times, is a good thing. It's nice to come to church and know what to expect. Normal starting time is 9:30. Normally, the men sit on this side. Ladies, you know, we come and there's just a lot of questions we don't even think about because there's a normal standard. And so, you know what happens? We take a lot of things just happen and we take them for granted. It's because it's normal. Is it possible, because we come to church every Sunday, or at least most every Sunday, we go to church, that seventh day of the week becomes normal? And is that okay if church is normal? If you're normal, you might be sitting here thinking, and I've done this too, so I'm not throwing stones at anybody in particular. I hope one of two things. I hope either this sermon is really short or that it's very interesting. I I've sat on the benches and I've sat there thinking these things too. And maybe sometimes I still do. Because there's a, and I think we all come to church this morning and we have a right, we have a right desire. We want to be here, I believe. But sometimes there can be a struggle between our head knowledge and our heart. Why are we here? Why are we here? And we can give all the right answers. Well, we're here because it's Sunday. It's a day of rest. We go to church to worship on Sunday. We sing and have devotions, Sunday school class, memory verse, a message. And maybe you sit here and this is just so normal that, you know, we start taking it for granted. And we don't really invest ourselves into it like we should. So, why do I come to church? We ask that question, you know, that question comes up a fair amount of times. Maybe Wednesday evening, why are you here tonight? Or sometimes a devotional on that. Why are you here this morning? I'll build on that a little bit. How did you and I prepare for this morning? How did you prepare your heart for this morning? What do you expect to get this morning from being here? You see the subtle danger that I laid out in a normal, I said this is kind of like what we're going to talk about is kind of like a mead coming under the wall because we're not paying attention, we're not watching for it. And I wonder if that's what can happen to us. I don't wonder. I know it's a threat to us to take Sunday morning worship for granted, for normal. And yes, we come with all the right understanding, the right knowledge, and yet are our hearts really tuned in for the worship? Is that what we're doing? Is that why we're here? I'd like to briefly look at an analogy of relationships, and specifically in a dating relationship that is going well. A couple enjoys spending time together and communicating, and it almost happens automatically. Once that's initiated, in fact, a lot of times it needs to be channeled. Maybe parents have input on that. And, sorry. What is so exciting initially in dating, eventually after marriage, things become normal. And since you're together all the time, what is the tendency? Well, after a little bit, the tendency, you lose value. The new and the excitement wears off. And all of a sudden, what was happening automatically, if you want to maintain it, it takes a lot of effort and a lot of work. And it's possible to maintain it, but it takes a conscious decision. And unless you're intentional about it, it won't happen automatically. And you will begin to lose your closeness. That's what happens. Do you see any analogy with that? Is it possible we do this with God? At first, our relationship with Him is exciting. And it's new. We're all in. But over time, maybe we tend to cool off a little bit. And we don't get as serious as we should. We still read the Word, but you know what? There's so many other interesting things in our lives that we can read too. And it's so easy to be on our phone that maybe our phone squeezes out time with God. Maybe it's something else for you. In fact, we have many other things in life to keep up with, and it can become hard to make it to prayer meeting and other services outside of Sunday morning. And if that's where you find yourself, here's some questions. Where is your heart? What is your value on your relationship with God? And who really is God to you? Who really is God? You know, when we love or admire someone, we want to get to know them better. And what do? We spend as much time as possible. We looked at that dating relationship. And I had to wonder, who would have to speak this morning or at an event here that you would say, you know what, you just go up there and you preach or you speak on your topic, whatever, as long as you want. We want to listen. You have the floor. And I don't say that because I want you to give me the, Greg, just preach till 12 o'clock if you want. No, I'm not saying that about me in any way. In that book we're studying in the upper graders, it said many services lasted 3 or 4 hours. Another place, I believe it talked about, sermons lasted several hours many times. And we think about who would come up here, and you might put a celebrity or someone popular, famous in there. Someone that stands out to me is maybe Michael Jordan. You would want to go hear him speak if he was right here somewhere. Wow. Maybe you would put Donald Trump in there. If he came and spoke at Donald Trump, just hey, we're going to listen. What value would you put on being part of it? And depending on what name you put in there, probably it affects how much value you put on how much time you would invest in or how much interest you invest. And maybe one of those names I gave perked your interest more than the other. And you know what? Inside you perked up just hearing that name. You know what? We would be interested in hearing him speak in person. So when we gather this morning, who is here? And you know what? Our head easily answers that question. Well, God's presence. You know, we're here to worship God. But do I act like it? How do I act for God this morning here in comparison to if one of the aforementioned or fill in the blank people that you think highly of, if he was sitting on the bench beside you or if he was speaking this morning, would you act any different? And so, we'll look at, you don't have to turn to it, but the words of Jesus, he was talking in Luke 11, 31 and 32. He said, "The queen of the south shall rise up in the judgment with the men of this generation and condemn them. For she came from the utmost parts of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon. And behold, a greater than Solomon is here. The men of Nineveh shall rise up in judgment with this generation and shall condemn it, for they repented at the preaching of Jonas. And behold, one greater than Jonas is here." Jesus was obviously talking about himself. "But the Queen of Sheba traveled far to hear Solomon. The people of Nineveh, they listened, they heard that message from the prophet Jonah. And both those men received credit for their calling, what they were trying to do, where God had them. Yet here was God in the form of Jesus Christ. He was present with them and they were rejecting him." Okay, is God here this morning? Is God in our daily lives? Is God greater than Solomon, Jonah, Jordan, Trump? Yeah, obviously. God's greater than anyone or anything. And yet we settle into routine by our actions, I think. And I'm afraid by our actions we show that we start taking for granted the significance of God, who he really is, that his presence is here. It's among us. I thought of that song. And listen to these words with me. God himself is present. Let us now adore him and with awe appear before him. God is in his temple. All within keep silence, humbly kneel in deepest reverence. He alone on his throne is our God and Savior. Praise his name forever. We sing that song, and if you're anything like me, many times I can sing a familiar song like that and hardly think of the words, hardly even enter into the message of the song. Because I enjoy the music or, you know, whatever it is. And or maybe I'm thinking about something totally different. I know the song, and so I don't even have to pay attention. God himself is present. Who actually is God? Why do we need to praise his name? Why do we give him that kind of adoration, awe, and deepest reverence? I would like to read several psalms this morning. And most of you are hoping that one of them is not Psalm 119. It's not Psalm 119. We will start with Psalm 96. My Bible has a heading with this. It says, "A Call to Worship the Lord." And as I read this, I want you to follow along in spirit, right? Not just the words, but enter into the message. Psalm 96. O sing unto the Lord a new song. Sing unto the Lord, all the earth. Sing unto the Lord, bless his name. Show forth his salvation from day to day. Declare his glory among the heathen, his wonders among all people. For the Lord is great and greatly to be praised. He is to be feared above all gods. For all the gods of the nations are idols. But the Lord made the heavens. Honor and majesty are before him. Strength and beauty are in his sanctuary. Give unto the Lord, O ye kindreds of the people. Give unto the Lord glory and strength. Give unto the Lord the glory due unto his name. Bring an offering and come into his courts. O worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness. Fear before him all the earth. Say among the heathen that the Lord reigneth. The world also shall be established, that it shall not be moved. He shall judge the people righteously. Let the heavens rejoice, let the earth be glad. Let the sea roar, and the fullness thereof. Let the field be joyful, and all that is therein. Then shall all the trees of the wood rejoice before the Lord, for he cometh to judge the earth. He shall judge the world with righteousness, and the people with his truth. A few comments on that chapter. It's a call to worship the Lord. And it points out various attributes or characteristics of God. It says, verse 3, he has glory and wonders. Verse 4, he is great and to be feared. Verse 5 simply says, he made the heavens. Verse 6, honor, majesty, strength, and beauty are part of him. Why are we giving him adoration, awe, and deepest reverence? Verse 9, says, oh, worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness. Is that beauty here this morning? Adam Clark's commentary said, in the beauty of holiness means the beautiful garments of holiness. And it talks here, it says, let the priests and Levites put on their best and cleanest apparel, and let the whole service be conducted in such a way as to be no dishonor to the divine majesty. So it talks about the preparation of the priests and the way they presented themselves and the beauty that was. But another thing I believe is holiness has that idea of being perfect and pure. And something that is perfect and pure is beautiful. It's free from blemish. Holiness is free from anything sinful and wrong. And that kind of perfection and beauty only comes from God. Verse 13, he says, the Lord is coming to judge the earth with righteousness and truth. He is the judge. Are you giving him, are you living your life giving him what he deserves? He will judge righteously. God is good, perfect, holy, and righteous, and he alone deserves our worship this morning. He deserves our hearts, our love, our commitment, our devotion, our attention. I'd like to read Psalm 97, and I believe some of this is referring to Mount Sinai, the experience the Israelites had there. But again, try to enter in and get the picture of what he's writing here. And the heading over this psalm in my Bible says, the Lord's power and dominion. Psalm 97, the Lord reigneth. Let the earth rejoice, let the multitude of the isles be glad thereof. Clouds and darkness are round about him. Righteousness and judgment are the habitation of his throne. A fire goeth before him and burneth up his enemies round about. His lightnings enlighteneth the world. The earth saw and trembled. The hills melted like wax at the presence of the Lord, at the presence of the Lord of the whole earth. The heavens declare his righteousness, and all the people see his glory. Confounded be all they that serve graven images, that boast themselves of idol. Worship him, all ye gods. Zion heard and was glad, and the daughters of Judah rejoiced, because of thy judgments, O Lord. For thou, Lord, art high above all the earth. Thou art exalted far above all gods. Ye that love the Lord hate evil. He preserveth the souls of his saints. He delivereth them out of the hand of the wicked. Light is sown for the righteous, and gladness for the upright in heart. Rejoice in the Lord, ye righteous, and give thanks at the remembrance of his holiness. It talks about the lightning, the power, the strength. It says the whole earth saw. The earth saw and trembled. Hills that melted like wax. Maybe some of this is figurative, but do we get the picture of a supremely almighty majesty, high above all the earth, exalted far above all gods? And yet his people come before him and give thanks at the remembrance of his holiness. Thinking about holiness, you can go to Psalm 99. And in this psalm, three times, it specifically mentions how God is holy. It says, praise to a holy God. Psalm 99, the Lord reigneth, let the people tremble. He sitteth between the cherubims. Let the earth be moved. The Lord is great in Zion, and he is high above all the people. Let them praise thy great and terrible name, for it is holy. The king's strength, and the Amplified Version has that king capitalized. The king's strength also loveth judgment. Thou dost establish equity, thou executest judgment and righteousness in Jacob, in Israel. Exalt ye the Lord, our God, and worship at his footstool, for he is holy. Moses and Aaron among his priests, and Samuel among them that call upon his name, they called upon the Lord, and he answered them. He spake unto them in the cloudy pillar, they kept his testimonies and the ordinance that he gave them. Thou answeredest them, O Lord our God. Thou wast a God that forgavest them, though thou tookest vengeance of their inventions. That means he forgave them, but he also punished them for their sin. Exalt the Lord, our God, and worship at his holy hill, for the Lord, our God, is holy. God is holy. What does that say about him? What are we saying when we talk about holiness? Strong's definition of holy is a sacred, ceremonially, and morally sacred, set apart or consecrated. And Webster's, I like their definition as well. It means exalted or worthy of complete devotion as one perfect in goodness and righteousness. I'm going to read that again. Exalted or worthy of complete devotion as one perfect in goodness and righteousness. That's definitely only God. It also, another definition says simply divine. How did people in the Bible respond to God's holiness? Let's look at a few examples. In Exodus 5, we have the story of Moses and the burning bush. And he said, draw not nigh hither, put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground. Moreover, he said, I am the God of thy father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. Isaiah 6:5. Then said I, woe is me, for I am undone, because I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. For my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. We have Job in chapter 40, 3 and 4. Then Job answered the Lord and said, behold, I am vile. What shall I answer thee? I will lay my hand upon my mouth. And one more, Luke 5. Verse 8, when Simon Peter saw it, this was when they took in the multitude of fishes. And when Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord. R.C. Sproul said this, an encounter with the holiness of God is always a traumatic experience. The scriptures record events where men were allowed to see something of the holiness of God. The response was always despair because they were forced to see their own sinfulness. This experience is positive, however, because it helps us to understand more adequately who God is and to realize that our standing before Him is based on His grace rather than our merit. A few scriptures that admonish, give us admonishment. Leviticus 11, verse 45 says, "For I am the Lord that bringeth you up out of the land of Egypt to be your God. Ye shall therefore be holy, for I am holy." And also in Leviticus 19, 2. And we talked about the Israelites, and they sure had a lot to learn, didn't they? We do too. "Speak unto all the congregation of the children of Israel, and say unto them, Ye shall be holy, for I am the Lord your God. For I, the Lord your God, am holy." And Romans 12, 1. "I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service." We're supposed to present ourselves holy and acceptable to God, and yet we just talked about how we cannot do it on our own, and so we have the grace of Jesus Christ, the plan of salvation, the avenue made available to us when we give our lives and live for Him. We can be presented holy and acceptable unto God. God is holy, and His desire is for us to be holy. How does that affect us this morning? I have some practical encouragement to help us come prepared for worship in the beauty of holiness on Sunday mornings. Number one, don't sleep in on Sunday morning. Get up on time, or even early. Why? Pray. Pray for the service, and specifically pray for the speakers, that the Spirit would fill them as they study and as they share. Have you prayed for the service this morning? Or did we come because it was normal? I've done that too much. I do want to say thank you for your prayers. Sometimes you can feel, as you study, things come together, or I had my brother tell me recently he wasn't studying to preach, but prayer changes things. It doesn't always happen as a miracle or an instant, but he said I was really tired and I had a lot. I think he was preparing for a meeting, and suddenly he said, you know, after a little bit, he said, I felt good. And he felt, up until that point that day, he was dragging. He wasn't sure how he was going to get through. And later he talked to another brother that he works with quite a bit, and he said, that brother told him, I prayed for you today at noon or whatever time it was, partway through the day. And he said, pray that God would give you strength and that He would help you with your work, what you had to do. And he said, that's interesting, because that's when I suddenly felt good and alert and awake and ready. So pray. Pray a blessing on the service. And number two, if you're not sleeping in, if you're not planning to sleep in the morning, well, make sure you go to bed on time. Pretty simple thing, right? Or go to bed early. Plan ahead. Prepare. Have your time of devotions Sunday morning. study the Sunday school lesson. Maybe you did the night before. Study it more. The idea is get your heart prepared for the spirit of worship. Another thing is, and this can be a struggle, have a structured morning routine, and that will help your family be and come prepared for worship as well. This can be a struggle. But running late and getting stressed out doesn't help anyone come prepared, come with a prepared heart. I know. I know this firsthand. So I'm talking to myself. Parents, encourage or even require participation in church. As we study the lessons of early Anabaptist history, I wonder how much those young people invested into a church service. And I wonder if we lose something because church is just normal and there's not that much urgency. There's not much to worry about. As Americans, we're not likely going to face persecution anytime soon. And so, you know, here we are. But will our children be anchored and ready to face the real world when they grow up? If they grow up with a passive approach to church. And my last one is remove your distractions. And no, you probably should not remove other people out of the church service if they're being distracting. But we need to be honest about this, because if you bring a distraction in your pocket and it disrupts your focus in worship, you interrupted a time with God, and possibly it interrupts other people's focus as well. If you have to get up or go out or pull it out of your pocket, it's just something we need to be honest about. What's most important when we're here? Do the things on this list make sense to you? Again, sometimes we have that head knowledge, but our heart isn't quite on the same page. So we can answer, yeah, that makes that, sure, yep, that makes sense. But then, we're doing something fun Saturday night. I can't get to bed. I know life is real. But what do you want to invest in? It can be hard to make it happen. It takes intentionality. It takes effort to schedule time to study that Sunday school lesson. And it takes effort to sit here and pay attention. How well does a conversation go with someone who stays looking at their phone while you're trying to talk to them? That happens to us a lot, probably. And what is that communicating? It communicates that, you know what? What's on my phone is really more important than stopping what I'm doing and having a engaged conversation with you, giving you my full attention. Yet I wonder sometimes if Sunday morning worship's like that. We come somewhat distracted. Maybe we're faithfully here in body, but our heart hasn't properly come prepared. And we're not prepared to worship the great and holy God that we read about in the Psalms. So if that's where you find yourself, do something to change it, right? In one of my opening thoughts, I mentioned thinking about how long this service will take and the idea of watching the clock. Is the clock a distraction? Maybe we should take it down. Or is the clock only a distraction because I came to hear a 35-minute sermon, and if it goes 45 or 50 minutes, that's too much. Is that a clock distraction or is that a heart distraction? Our number one commitment must be to grow more like Christ every day. Growth doesn't come easy. needs to come from our heart. A brother sent me a little clip, and I'll read part of it. It's talking about the children of Israel. And the comment was, the more comfortable we become, the less we welcome change. And yet there's no growth without challenge, and there's no challenge without change. Comfort usually leads to complacency, and complacency is the enemy of character and spiritual growth. Normal. Complacency. In each new experience of life, one of two things happen. Either we trust God and he brings out the best in us, or we disobey God and Satan brings out the worst in us. Maybe we self-destruct if we don't respond to the challenge to grow. God himself is present. He's here. He's also at your home, at your work, and does your life. Your attitude, your actions reflect a good, engaged relationship with him, his holy presence. Or does it reflect that relationship we talked about earlier that became normal, kind of grew cold, or it wasn't as strong as it should be? Our daily choices reflect what the answer really is. And so may God give us strength to rise above those needs that threaten to come in and weaken us in our routine Christian living. I'm thankful that we can live normal lives, and we are so blessed. But may we truly love God as we should. Psalm 99, verse 5 again. Exalt ye the Lord, our God, and worship at his footstool, for he is holy. Let's kneel for prayer.